This podcast is brought to you by Steed Motor Group Claregalway. For your personalised vehicle shopping experience, find out more at steedmotorgroup.ie.
Now to be joined by Kieran Murphy of Second Captains. We're just going to talk all things Galway football. But at the very start, we're going to talk about Kieran's book, This Is The Life, which is a tremendous read. I gave it a read there myself over the Christmas and really enjoyed it. So different to lots of GA books, you could say. That's firstly where I want to go into, Kieran. What made you, I suppose, do a book that's so different to other GA books?
Thanks a million for having me, first of all, Paul. Long-time listener, first-time guest, as the old saying goes. What made me want to write the book in the way, I suppose, that you're describing it there? I don't know. I mean, in ways, I know that it is different because it's about, you know, obviously it's not about the intercounty, you know, star, or and it's not about the intercounty manager. And I know that that's the case, and I couldn't write one of those books. So in ways, the book is the only book that I could have written if I was writing about my own kind of life in the GA, because this, you know, what's described in the book has been my life, you know. It is the life of this kind of solid club player, the guy who played, you know, for a few minutes for, you know, your county minor team or under 21 team or under 20 team now, as it is now, or, you know, dabbled in Sigerson or Fitzgibbon Cup. And, you know, I'm lucky in that respect, in that it's a book that hasn't really been written, but that actually describes the reality of a lot of people's lives in the GA, you know, way more than playing in All-Ireland finals. Like, that is the 99%, really, isn't it? You know, that the person who grew up in a GA family, the person who's, you know, who was lucky enough in my case to grow up in a really great GA place, a great GA village, a great GA club in Milltown. So that was it. In ways, I know the question you're asking, but in another way, I couldn't have written any other book. So that was kind of how the ball got rolling.
When or how did this idea, when did it come into your head initially?
Well, I was very lucky in a lot of ways. So Penguin Random House are my publishers, and Michael McLaughlin is the chief executive there, and Brendan Barrington is kind of their head editor. And the two of them asked me just to sit down for a coffee in September of 2021, September, October 2021. And they had kind of had read my Irish Times columns and thought that maybe there might have been a book floating around in my head. And to be honest, I hadn't really ever given it a massive amount of thought, other than just, you know, I would love to write a book at some stage. And that was literally it. Just the idea of a book was something that I was in favor of. But I didn't have like sort of a tranche of ideas ready and waiting to go. But they asked me to have a think about it, and I thought about it for 2 or 3 months, and I wrote what ended up being the first chapter of the book about kind of my dad's move to Milltown and how involved he got in managing underage teams in the village for 10 or 15 years while me and my three older brothers were growing up. And I wrote that, and I sent it off to them, and I said, listen, if I were to write a book, this is kind of the sort of thing that I would like to write about. With an outline of the kind of the rest of the chapters, or some of the chapters that ended up being in the book. And we kind of just took it from there. So kind of from September 2021 up until maybe April or May of, I nearly said this year, last year, 2023, about 15 or 16 kind of months of work. And I'm just really grateful, obviously, to Penguin for asking me to come along to that initial meeting. And then just kind of deciding myself that it was something that was worth doing, and maybe actually worth doing while I was still playing as well. And that was a point actually that Brendan Barrington had made to me, that maybe it would be no harm to write this while you were still togging out, even at the kind of low level that we're, I mean, I was playing intermediate football in 2022, which is kind of when I was writing the majority of the book, and I'm playing with the thirds and studiously avoiding the WhatsApp group at the moment while the lads are back training in January. So but I think it is worthwhile to do these things when you're playing, because you know, you do just have a completely different outlook, and it doesn't really matter the level, but when you talk about kind of how the game is developing and or the things that matter to club players and, you know, club administrators, I think it's really worthwhile to, you know, to be in the middle of it while you're writing it. So I was kind of glad that was the case as well.
Just with it early on in the book, you're obviously talking about your early playing career. You talk about not being involved with J-lets and then going minor, going under 21s. Just with that, was that uncomfortable for you talking about your playing career? Because we all know GA players don't like to talk themselves up. Nobody likes to talk themselves up and say, I'm class, basically. What
Oh,
kind of,
absolutely. Yeah. I
yeah.
mean, like it was, you know, I had to really nearly force myself to write it because, and, but it would also have been daft for me to write a book about kind of my life in the GA when, like, for all that I love the GA as a cultural institution, for all that I love reporting on it, for all that I love watching it as a Galway supporter, I mean, none of that comes within a million miles of the enjoyment you get as a player. And so that is like the most visceral, the most emotionally impactful part of the GA for me still. It's just like my own experiences as a player, my own continuing experiences as a player. So I kind of danced around it a bit, and I tried to convince myself that I could write the book without talking about that. But in the end, you know, it would have been dishonest, nearly, you know, to not just kind of grasp the nettle. Now, I mean, when I sit down and talk about the few minutes I played with the Galway under-21s or with DCU in the Sigerson, I mean, I purposely kind of included snippets of some of the great Jimmy Sloane's thoughts on Mayo football, because honestly, like, I know how this sounds, you know, I know how what it sounds like when lads who never met it talk about, you know, their own glory days. I mean, you know, I guess that you had on in the last couple of weeks. Like, I'm the same age as Dermot Blake. I started in primary school the same day as Dermot. You know, I played in a Connacht under 21 final, and Dermot was actually, I think he was injured, but he came on in that game. And, you know, Dermot has played in dozens and dozens of more important games than that. Like, it could be 100 games that he's played in that are more impactful and more memorable for him than that Connacht under 21 final. Like, it's the pinnacle for me, but for other lads on that team, like Michael Meehan, Nicky Joyce, Dermot, Cormac Bann, like, we had a ton of brilliant players. Michael Comer, Darren Mullaghy, John Devan, like, all those guys played in so many more important games than that, so many more memorable games than that. That it's nearly daft, like, that someone for whom it was the biggest day could be sharing a dressing room with him, but that's what it was, you know. So, you know, like, we all know Jimmy Sloane's, like, we all have, like, you know, an idea in our head of a Jimmy Sloane type who's banging on about, you know, how he could have met it and how good he was as a minor and all the rest of that nonsense. So I was acutely aware that I didn't want to come off like that, but at the same time, you know, you gotta just, and in the same way that you don't want to, you obviously don't want to oversell yourself, but there's not a whole lot of point in underselling yourself either. But I mean, I have been a little worried. You know, people have come up and it's like, obviously you were, you know, really good, you know? Like, a lot of people have come up to me and said that, and I'm like, well, hold on a minute here. I don't know where you're getting that idea from, but you didn't get it from me. So yeah, like, that's kind of that's the risk you take, you know, that is the risk you take. But at the same time, I couldn't write a book like this and not talk about the couple of big days I had, you know.
You talk about the big days there, and even when you talk about the Connacht minor final, you talk about when you could have taken on the shot, you pass it to your teammate, and you get turned over there. Do you ever wonder, like, from being involved with Galway minor in 21s, does it ever cross your mind, what if?
Funny, not at all. Because I know what it takes to get there. You know, like, I was lucky enough to be in school with, or be in college with, or just be friendly with plenty of lads who played for a decade for Galway, and I know exactly what they had that I didn't have, you know. So it's not a what if at all. I mean, there's a what if. You describe an incident there at the end of the Connacht under 21 final where I get the ball 45 yards out, we're a point down. And I passed the ball to a guy in a marginally better position, he gets turned over. And obviously, I probably should have taken on the shot. I should have like had my eyes up to ensure that the guy I passed it to wasn't going to get turned over. That didn't. So, I mean, I can play the what if in that narrow sense, in that if that ball had gone over, that would have been a nice moment. Maybe we go up to Castlebar the following Wednesday, beat them in the replay, go and win an All-Ireland final. But that's what it would have been. You know, it would have been an All-Ireland under-21 that hopefully we might have, or, you know, that, you know, in this magical world we're inhabiting for a second here, it would have been an All-Ireland under-21 medal that I might have been able to walk away with. As regards, like, the broader scope of, you know, a person's career, like, you know, that's just not it. You know, it's not there, you know, and, like, and it wasn't there. And I know what was there for the likes of, say, of, and I mentioned Nicky again, just because he was an exceptional club player who was the same age as me, or, you know, John Devan, who was a year younger than me, like, and kicked 9 points from midfield in 2002, you know, as an 18-year-old or 19-year-old in a senior club championship game. Like that's the level, you know, that's the level that you have to get. So there's never what ifs in the kind of macro sense, you know, like the great thing about sport, and I think it manifests itself across the board, not just in Gaelic games, but in football and in rugby and everything, is that there isn't really any such thing as, you know, the guy who was unjustly overlooked or whatever. Like, sport is a great leveler. It's an unbelievable leveler. And over the course of even one club championship, you will be able to see the guy who's maybe ready to take the step up and the guy who can do it one day but not the next day. And, you know, so, like, that's the reality of top level sports. So I have absolutely no regrets or no what ifs or anything like that, because I have too much respect for the guys who the for the work that the guys who made it actually put into it.
It's really interesting in the book because you talked like throughout the book about controversial things that go on in GAA clubs across the country, but something that obviously takes up a kind of large proportion of the book. Your transfer, obviously, you've started out playing with Milltown since you were a kid. You played in the county final against Killarney and you came up short there, and then you obviously made the move to Dublin with your career. And then now you're still playing for Temple Oaks, Sinn Street. But on the transfer as a whole, people mightn't be aware you started out playing with Vincent's for a year. But how difficult was it to leave Milltown?
This was it. Like, I actually didn't realize how difficult it was until it had been done in a lot of ways. You know, so I moved to Dublin in September of 2003, and I've never lived anywhere other than Dublin since. So I'm actually longer in Dublin now than I was in Milltown, which, you know, kind of the thought of which actually came to me when I was writing the book, which in itself is kind of a cause for pause, if you know what I mean. But, so I got injured then, kind of the summer of 2004, didn't play at all in 2004 and 2005. And then I met my old Sigerson Cup manager, Mickey Whelan, at a press conference, actually. And he kind of was inquiring as to who I was playing with. And I was like, geez, I actually haven't kicked a ball in nearly 2 years. And he was like, you know, sure, come down to training. And, you know, there's probably an element as well of it being Mickey Whelan asking you as well. And he was an exceptional football coach and still is, actually. And, so I went down, and, you know, there's kind of, I kind of like sleepwalked into the decision, you know, and it was kind of only after I'd moved that I realized actually this probably isn't the right thing to do. And, you know, at that stage, you know, the move had gone through and all the rest. So it never really, and this isn't the fault of Vincent at all, but it just never really felt like it never really felt right, you know, it never really did. And by the time I went back to Milltown for Christmas in 2006, you know, I kind of stepped away from Vincent just for a variety of reasons, like work being the main thing, because I was working on a radio show that was working till 10 o'clock every night, and, you know, it was not conducive to trying to make a name for yourself in a club when no one other than the manager knew you. So I kind of threw my hands up at it. But then when I went back home for Christmas, and a couple of lads, well, talking to people my age, and some of them using the carrot, some of them using the stick, you know, but the second I moved back then, that I knew it was the right thing to do, you know, and I knew that for as long as I could do it, I would keep doing the kind of up and down from Dublin. I knew that there was a shelf life to that as well, but I also knew that I just wanted to do that and do it for as long as I could. And when that stopped being fun, just kind of see what happens then, you know. But yeah, it was like, it's turbulent, you know, it's not an easy decision to make. And I thought maybe that it was easier than it was. And my work at the time meant I was like very, very seldom at home. So it was nearly like my family that were dealing with it rather than me, any fallout or any, you know, kind of, you know, geez, he should be back with us kind of thing. So even that alone, the fact that like it was my family that was dealing with it rather than me, that was kind of a major kind of push factor into me moving back with Milton. And then, but then just the way the following year went, when we reached county final, it was just the most, I don't know, kind of unbelievable, well, validation, if you want to use that word, of my decision to move back. But also just like, this is what you could have missed out on. Like, imagine if you were sitting in Dublin while Milltown got to a county final, and how sick you'd have been, and how guilty you'd have felt, and how jealous of your friends you'd have been. So that was kind of, you know, that was just, it was kind of weird how it worked out, but it was absolutely incredible, really, you know. And it's still kind of the most, I don't know, emotionally charged part of my life in the GA that I'll ever have, you know, that we were that close, 2 points in the end. Although Killearn were the better team, without doubt. But we were that close to winning a county title, you know. So there was certainly a time in my life when I would have thought about it every day. I'm probably down to like once every 3 days now, thinking of the 2007 county final. I think they call that personal growth. I think that's what they call it anyway. But yeah, that was kind of a mad time. But I certainly don't regret moving back, and I certainly don't regret anything that happened since then either, you know.
Milltown obviously still has a very special place in your heart. You mentioned it in the book that you tried to get down to as many Milltown senior football games as possible. But even when I was talking to Dermot, there's a spirit in Milltown, and like you talk about it, like when you're coming up the underage ranks, there's not a choice. Like if more than likely, if you stay playing, you're going to find your way onto the senior panel. But can you just describe what is that spirit in Milltown?
See, it's very easy to, I don't know, fall into cliche maybe about it. And then it's also easy to convince yourself that Milltown is the only place like that, you know. Really, I might be more comfortable talking about what it means to grow up in a consistently overachieving small village. I think, as Jeremy referenced, actually, the fact that it is like monotheistic, you know, there's no other religion in Milltown except football. There's no rugby, there's no soccer. It is an extremely football heavy culture. But I don't want to say that that's only in Milltown. I mean, a point I make in the book actually is that, you know, Northeast Galway, say the 15 miles around Tuam, and this isn't to demean the Connemara footballers, the city footballers that have been brilliant for Galway over a long number of years. But if you look at the nine All-Ireland winning teams that Galway have produced, so many of them are from that, actually quite small geographical area. And there's every, like, you know, there is no other comparable area of rural Ireland that has produced more All-Ireland winning footballers outside of Kerry than Northeast Galway. So you kind of have to take on board the fact that it's not just Milltown, but actually, you know, large swathes of North Galway that is, you know, even from a national perspective, almost unique in its love for Gaelic football. So it's a proper hotbed of football. Milltown maybe is, you know, it has also like kind of the border energy as well. So there is that idea that playing for Galway really means an awful lot to Milltown people, because we're so close to Mayo, and because the rivalry is so intense, you know, friendly and all the rest, but also intense around Milltown. I mean, representing your county means an awful lot. We also have Jarlath very close by, which for years and years was just a huge net benefit to Milltown, because there's a lot of brilliant coaching obviously that has gone on in Jarrett's over the years. But there is a spirit, there is a spirit in Milltown that, I might try and say isn't unique, but I've certainly had never felt it in any other club that I've been involved in. That kind of never say die thing that we just grew up with, the idea that Milltown is just a not a terribly easy place for teams to go and play. Like a physical edge as well that we've always never kind of really shied away from. But it's also, and they're kind of more general points, but like in more specific ways, Milltown has been blessed by some really great families, and I played with Ford brothers, Brian and Eddie and Dermot, and just exceptional footballers. And the Blakes are foremost in that. Like to have four brothers contributing as much as the Blake brothers are still doing to Milltown, like it's incredible. It's genuinely incredible what they've given. Like in years past, the Waldrons, the Brennans, Sean, who I write about in the book, captain of the 71 team that won our first county title. It's still backbone the Fearricks, it's still backbone by these in a way that it has to be in a club our size, so we've been blessed that those families have come along and have been just such huge contributors to the club and to the idea of football in Milltown. And like a lot, like the book is in ways like a quest to try and answer that. Like, what does it mean to be from a place like Milltown? What makes it different and special? And I remember listening to your pod the week, I think before the county semi-final, on the drive down actually, and you were running through, I think, the junior quarterfinals or the intermediate rather quarterfinals that had been on the week before. And I was just sitting there thinking, like Glenamaddy, Corthoon, brilliant clubs, Munavie Abbey, Kilconley, they're all kind of very close to Milltown. They don't have smaller picks. Some of them probably have bigger picks nearly than Milltown. And we're preparing for a county semi-final, and like it's such a massive overachievement for Milltown to be competing at that level, I think, because our level probably is where those clubs are, and yet we still manage to, we've been senior now 61, 62 years. And we know that gravity will probably make itself felt eventually, but we should celebrate the fact that we've been punching above our weight for that amount of time. It's pretty incredible.
Where does the overachieving there, you mentioned it, but how are they still overachieving, do you think?
I don't know. I think there's certainly an element of, so many brilliant players. Like Cathal Blake was full forward and had Michael Meehan and Sean Armstrong either side of him in the 2005 under-21 All-Ireland final, and he was pulling the strings for those two. And it was an incredible trio, really. And like we would be maybe a little self-centered and say that it wasn't just a double act; it was a threesome. But for Carl to be as good as he is still is incredible. But we've managed to do that with all of the players that have played at a higher level. They've all just given an incredible amount to the club. And that doesn't mark them out as exceptional either, but it is noteworthy, that like they have sacrificed so much for the club. They'll always, and they'll just keep doing it until they know that it's in safe hands. And we're really lucky, I think, as well, that just as those guys are coming to the kind of the autumn of their careers, Jack Costello, Jack Curran and Liam Costello and Niall Costello have come along, and players that in that kind of age bracket. And they have, like, I see Jack Curran and like he's not the same footballer as Jermaine Blake. Like they're quite different physically, they're different in a load of different ways, but I see that devil in him, and I've been watching him for the last couple of years, and I'm like, well, that's that is, I don't know what that is. If you could bottle it would be amazing, but he just has that devil in him, that it's a personal insult to him for Milltown to be losing games, and Liam Costello is the exact same, so I just all you have to do is produce one or two every year, you know, and that's been, you know, that's been the way in Milltown. You know, like, we're not going to have a team. Like, I was so lucky. I grew up on a team. We had 12 boys in the National School in Milltown, and I think easily six of us were playing in that county final in 2007. You know, like, that's a huge crop to get from just like one under 12 team or one under 14 team. Like, we're not going to get that probably. But we managed to bring one or two through most years and hang on to them, you know, and they stick around and they commit themselves massively to it, and that's it. There's no real secret to it, you know. But yeah, we're it's an incredible place, an incredible club, you know.
Funny you say that about a 112 team, because like in my primary school days I played against Milltown in a Connemara school final, and Jack Crane and Owen Mannion would have been on that team, but they all come from that sixth class team, so it's a
That's
common
it, you
team.
know. Like, and if two, you know, if you can get two or three or maybe four from the same year, then there's, you know, like, that's the spine of the team. Then they're used to playing with each other. They're used to leaning on each other and leading each other, and that's how it goes, you know. Like, and for places like Milltown, that's, you know, that's gold dust. You know, we can't afford to look that gift horse in the mouth, you know.
When you talk about like GA transfers, as obviously mentioned in the book, from Milltown eventually then to Temple Oaks in Street, but Shane Walsh's transfer last year to Kilmacud, a lot of people weren't happy with it, and there still isn't a lot of people weren't happy with it. But isn't this the thing really? Like, there's always begrudgers when it comes to any transfer at all in the GA.
Well, I would say that my transfer to Temple Oaks East Street, having not played football for 3 or 4 years at all in Milltown at 35, there certainly wasn't anyone in Milltown shedding a tear on my behalf as they waving white hankies as I boarded the train in Claremorris up to Dublin. I don't think there was any of that going on, but I mean, I know the point that you make. It's you know, it's not easy, and certainly in Shane's case, you know, has there ever been a more high profile transfer? Probably not. So, you know, you kind of got to judge these things on its merit, on their merits, in their individual merits, you know. And if Shane is moving to Dublin and lives in Dublin, going to college in Dublin, and he feels like that's what he wants to do, I think it would be ill-advised for the GAA to kind of step in there in a situation and say, listen, you kind of actually have to go back to your home club. I don't think that's possible, you know. So I think you just have to trust players to make the decision that's best for them. And you know, this Shane Walsh's transfer was never going to become, you know, a patient zero for like an epidemic of transfers, because the same questions have been asked for 40 or 50 years. You know, Ireland is becoming a more urbanized country. There still aren't enough clubs in urban areas in Ireland. There are too many. If you were to look, you know, like, you know, with a totally desensitized eye to rural Ireland, you would say there are probably too many GAA clubs in Ireland. Like, the people are going in one direction, and it's from rural areas to urban areas, and you have to respect that, and you have to say, at some stage, the kind of emotional blackmail upon which the GAA has run for so many years, you know, people have to cry halt to that at some stage as well. So I'm kind of loath to talk about individual cases, just because we actually don't know the ins and outs. You know, we really genuinely don't. And I know, you know, Shane talked about finishing his degree and going back to Kilcurran Clonburn, and you know, I hope that that happens. Genuinely, I do. I think it would be great, but it's the hardest decision a fella under 30 is ever going to make in his life, you know. It is, you know, like I say, I sleepwalked into it. I mean, I don't know that too many others have done that. You know, for a lot of people, it's really, you know, it's a very, very intense decision that they have. And you know, like, I'm playing with a ton of country players up here in Temple Oaks Sink Street, you know. And we all talk about it, you know. We all kind of talk about kind of how long that they've been up and down the road, and what kind of bit, you know. It's usually kind of you turn 30 and you know, maybe you want to start a family or you get married or whatever. And life just kind of makes the decision for you in a lot of ways. And I think that you just kind of have to respect that as well. And also probably not to catastrophize it overly either, because, you know, the GA club is going to be all right. You know, the basic structure of a GA club is going to be all right. And Kilcurran Clonburn are, you know, they're going to be fine. So you know, this kind of idea that, you know, something has to be done to stop the, that's not how this operates either, you know. And hopefully, you know, relations between Shane and Kilcurran Clonburn are good. And if Shane feels like the next chapter of his life is going to be down the west of Ireland, then that's, wouldn't it be brilliant to see him back playing with them? But I mean, I'm not going to criticize him. I mean, maybe I would be exceptionally hypocritical to say I was critical of him, but I mean, I do actually think that as well, that like you just have to say, if for 2 or 3 years this kind of, you know, gets a work-life balance, work-life GA balance in his life, then I think you kind of have to just hold your hands up and say, right, trust the guy to do make the right decision for him.
You mentioned they're still playing for Temple Owe. What's the biggest difference between a rural and city club from you, from your playing experiences?
Well, I'll go back training at some stage, maybe tomorrow, maybe in the next couple of weeks. And I guarantee you there'll be, and I've been in the club now 7 years. I think this is my 8th year playing with Temple Oak Sing Street. I guarantee you someone will come up to me and go, oh, this guy's back training now. He's been abroad for 7 or 8 years, but he's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, he played maybe, he had trials for the Dublin under 16s and the Dublin minors. Oh, he like, and like, he's just, he's amazing, you know? And it always kind of blows my mind, as in, like, why haven't we been, you know, begging this guy to come back? Why have we been sitting our hands if this guy's so good, you know? Whereas in Milltown, it's, you know, there aren't people like that, you know, that we're just like, ah, we'll leave him be for another couple of years, and, you know, maybe he'll pick up the phone and call us, you know, like the, it's just the way the numbers is the massive difference, you know. And I'm actually involved with the minor team management this year. And there's just players on players, you know, like they'll have 60 players at minor level, you know, and Milltown, you know, won't, won't, they would have 60 players. So, you know, like, and that's it, you know, and I like, so, and one of the big things as well, those 60 minor players, like it would be brilliant for all of them to have a lifelong relationship with the GA club. It would be brilliant for us, and it would be brilliant for the young fellas themselves. But that's just not possible. That's, you know, we have four adult teams and we only started our fourth team last year, I think. And we have three minor teams. So where do all those players go, you know? And that's kind of the, that's kind of the big difference, you know, that I think, you know, I even make reference to it in the book, that it's kind of like an opt-in, opt-out organ
Yeah.
donation type thing, you know, that like, you have to opt in to play adult football in Dublin, as in you have to make a decision and say, okay, I'm out of the minor grade now. I have to call someone to say I'm interested in playing with the second team or the third team or the fourth team or whatever. Whereas in Milltown, you have to opt out because it's there for you. You know, if you're 18 years old in Milltown, then you're one of five phone calls that the manager will 100% make on the 3rd of January to say, right, come down and play juniors, and we'll be training with the seniors anyway. Do you know what I mean? It's not like, you know, it's a streamlined scenario. It's like if you were an adult male in the village, you will be coerced into training. So I think that like that's the massive difference. You know, like it's just the numbers. It's just a complete demographics game, and it can be hard to get your head around, but. You know, like we won a AFL 5, which is kind of like the bottom half of junior to get promoted to intermediate. And I remember we were doing, this is like 4 years ago, and we were doing like kind of an end of year, you know, medal presentation, drinking session kind of thing. And we had to get medals for everyone who had played. And there were 37 lads who had started a game. Now we play 15 league games, which is absolutely brilliant. And I know that there are Galway junior players maybe listening to this, shaking their heads at how few games they play in comparison to Dublin When it comes to league games and all the rest. But we played 15 games. 37 players started a game that year. Not like, there was one lad who came on for 5 minutes in one game. Like, that's how many players they have for a second team. And there's two other teams below that as well. So it is, it's just, the numbers are just completely, completely different. There's a lot that's the same as well, that for all these numbers, there's still four or five people who are just huge drivers in the club, who do so much in the club, and who kind of create what it means to be a club member up here as well. So it's not that it like that part of it isn't that different. But yeah, it is, of course it's different, and but also in the same way, I look at the facilities that Milltown have. We actually, I brought the Temple Oak Sing Street team that I played on in 2023 down to play the Milltown Junior team in November. It was kind of a, people were calling it testimonial goodbye to football. I was like, well, I actually do intend playing, but everyone was very eager to shove me out the door. But so we had an absolutely amazing day in November. We hung around Milltown for a few pints as well, and it was incredible, actually, genuinely special day for me. But
How was that experience of having you could say the Jackings in Milltown?
it was incredible. I played a half with both teams, and I was the happiest man in the world, I think, that day, to be honest. It was great. But and everyone mixed freely without incident, as they say. But but I mean, at the same time, like the lads from Sing Street couldn't get over how good our facilities were, And I would say that Milton have very, very good facilities for sure. It's they're not like completely a level above every other club in Galway. Like, it's just like that's what you'd expect to have: a training pitch, floodlights, a main pitch, a stand. Like, our facilities in comparison are just, they're nowhere near that. And it kind of boggles my mind as well to see just how many GAA clubs in Dublin, like, I'm getting changed, on the sideline, like that still happens up here. Whereas in a million years, you wouldn't get that in Galway. So, there are differences across the board. Milton have all the facilities and none of the numbers, whereas it's kind of the opposite up here, is a pithy way of describing the differences, maybe.
You mentioned there you're going again for 2024 with Temple Oak Sing Street. Are you still loving playing as much as ever, or do you kind of start off not enjoying it and then gradually get into it?
Well, let's just say January, I'll be picking my evenings. I'm kind of they've nearly seconded me onto the management of this thirds team as well. So I'm keenly aware of what day they'll be doing the running and what day they definitely will not be doing the running. So let's just say, I'll be picking and choosing my evenings to go training. But at this hour of my life, honestly, Paul, like, if I stopped, I'd have to pick up something else. I'd have to go marathon running or join a gym or all these things I've studiously avoided over the last 20 years. So I'd have to replace it with something that I know for a fact I will enjoy 10% as much as I do playing Gaelic football. So it is kind of weird. Like, say at 37 or 38, you're like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this anymore. I should probably knock it on the head now or whatever. And then I think you kind of, once you get past that phase, you're literally, I'll just keep playing until I can't, because it's so much fun. And particularly at, say I'm playing AFL 7, so again, that's probably like the bottom half of junior, or the top half of junior B, I suppose. Like, there is no pressure. There is, it's just pure enjoyment. I'm playing with a lot of lads that I would have, played with when I first joined the club and everything. They were kind of all aging down the grades together. And it's just an incredible amount of fun. I'm enjoying it as much as I ever have. And as well, you kind of have to admit to yourself that, when you were playing for Milltown and going up and down at the weekends, it was a commitment. Whereas this isn't a commitment at all. Like, it isn't a commitment to play football for the Temple Oak Sing Street Thirds. It's just a joy. It's just a complete and utter joy. And it's, I never really need to be convinced to go down training if I can be assured that it's just football. If there's running, then I've it, it it it's one of my most strongly held and long held beliefs that that's for other positions on the field. Where, the way I play the game, we don't need this. Short, sharp bursts of activity. That's all I'm looking for.
I do have to ask, I did see you lined out for the Dublin Masters.
Oh.
How did that go down in Milltown?
In Milton, I don't think they even knew, to be honest. But in my family, like a lead balloon, genuinely, just so many of my brothers just completely and utterly appalled at the idea. My three best friends, basically, in Temple Oak Sainte Street were all playing with the Dublin Masters team in 2022. And I was of an age from that year. And they had asked me, was I interested? And I said, ah, no, kind of just waved my hand at it. And then they kind of came back again in at the start of last year, and they were just they you know they were persuasive. So I ended up wearing the blue and navy, and it was genuinely hilarious. Like, it was hilarious, the reaction of my non-Dublin friends up here. Most of them don't even care about the GA, but there is something about the sight of me wearing a Dublin jersey, an AIG jersey. It just like drove them demented, so I kind of got a kick out of that, to be honest, and it was a lot of fun, like met a lot of really great people, and it was a laugh. It was just a laugh all over. Now, of course, like one look at the fixture list, of course, the vital last league game is against Galway in Clare-Galway. So, I mean, there was like a 1 in 3 chance that I was going to be playing Galway. And then, and within that, then a 50-50 chance that it was going to be on in Galway. And of course, the odds fell the other way. So all of my family showed up, all of them wearing maroon. I suppose I just had to wear that one. And Galway won as well. So, yeah, that was kind of a fraught, that was kind of a fraught afternoon, but it was all in, all in good taste, and I knew a fair few of the Galway lads as well, as it turns out. So, we had a bit of fun afterwards.
Did you keep that on the down low at the start?
I kind of well, see, one of the main things that I've like say on the podcast or writing a column about it. Like the big thing about like kind of writing, I prefer to write at the end of the year about all that, because writing in the middle of a season or writing, it's just. There's no upside, and there's probably quite a bit of downside to kind of talking about it. So I just kind of I made a point, because I mean, who knows what happens? I get injured in April, and then I don't line out for Dublin at all, don't play at all, and you're just kind of talking out of your hat, really. So I always kind of endeavor to keep that quiet. But then, of course, my fellow second captain's hosts were so delighted at the level of reaction that they were certain this news would get, that they couldn't sit on that on this particular news for too long without mentioning it. So it was all in good fun though, and yeah, it was. And the Masters competition is actually great. It is. It's a brilliant competition. And for the people that are in it, it's very serious while the game is on. But other than that, it's for lads who, have really put in the work for 20 or 25 years with their club often, and they get a chance to play, represent their county at the kind of the tail end of their playing lives. And it's brilliant, and it means so much to so many of them. And yeah, no, it's great. It's a laugh, and it's great fun.
Just in the book, you talk about going to Galway matches, and this is where I'm going to kind of tie in a bit of like the season about to start here. But as a journalist, do you like this time of year? Obviously, there's a lot of anticipation now among GAA supporters. The FPT League starting, it's probably high on a lot of people's priority list.
Yes.
This Friday, obviously, starting Galway playing Leitrim in the Dome. But do you like this time of year?
Well, I'll to be honest, there's no part of the idea of supporting Galway that I don't like, and but I mean, like, there I again it kind of comes down to kind of your circle of friends or your family or whatever, and how important it is to those people. Like, for some reason, my brother is sending in a Happy New Year message into the family WhatsApp group, and adding it with, and just says Galway are going to win SAM this year, and I did, like, one has no relation to the other, but I know exactly why he did it, because For many of us, our lives aren't going to change massively from one year to the next. But the idea that Galway might end the year with some silverware would mark out 2024 as a year amongst all others. Like 1998 is like you don't have to say 1998, and my brain doesn't go anywhere else other than Croke Park. Like there is that level of anticipation there. Last year was so disappointing, but actually looking back on it now, it's actually really easy to deconstruct the season and say, right, well, if a couple of things had gone a little differently, then Galway would not have been that far away at all. And I think that the fact that the management team has remained in place is a big thing, including Keane O'Neill being retained. So there isn't really a reason for us to not be hopeful, at least, and like there were enough times between 2001 and now when it just seemed that we were completely off the pace, or that there was a team so far ahead of us that even thinking of winning an All-Ireland was just seemed extremely fanciful. I think that there are a number of county supporters that could sit down today and say, right, well, it does. This doesn't have to be a miracle shot for us to win All-Ireland, and I think that Galway people are absolutely in that bracket. I think we can absolutely say right now that the football team, if things go right for them, if things go right for them, they have the chance to win an All-Ireland this year. So, I have been writing probably for years about how mentally deranged you have to be to go to FBD league games, but I mean, at the same time, come Friday evening, if I'm not, and I mean, I'm pretty sure that my wife is actually out of the house on Friday evening. I mean, is it a distinct possibility that I'll be paying my 11.50 to stream this game? I mean, I would say it's more likely than not that I'll end up doing it. I'm not sitting on my high horse here. I am unfortunate. I am one of the one of the unfortunates who can't who just can't stay away from it,
You said Galway have a chance of winning the All-Ireland there, can it happen?
Yeah, I think it can. Yeah, I think it can. I think if we had finished the Armagh game with Damien Comer, Sean Kelly on the field and uninjured, we'd have won that game. We wouldn't have had to have played Mayo. And it's not a sign of weakness to say that Shane Walsh, Sean Kelly, Damien Comer, if the three of them are humming, like really, really humming in June and July, then I think we have an excellent chance. I think Dublin and Kerry will be, most people's one and two. But I mean, if you go back even to like June of last year, like the weekend before the Armagh game, like we had Paul Flynn and Michael Murphy on our podcast, and both of them were like, I think Galway are favourites for the All-Ireland. That if they were picking winners, even then, Galway were, if not their actual pick, very close to being their pick. So what happened after that, you can't disregard it. Obviously, that's not how the championship works. But you kind of have to, you have to step away from kind of the series of events during that Armagh game, the miss free at the end, and then the Mayo game, which was just like exceptionally disappointing. But that is the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. And say Galway still have most of the pieces. Most of the pieces of the puzzle are there for Galway. Can we add a few more? That's probably why I'll end up paying the County Council 11.50 on Friday evening to see if there's a couple of pieces there. And that's it. That's part of the equation, but absolutely Galway have the material there. But by the same token, this team, Shane Walsh may never play in another All-Ireland final. And I actually said that the night of the All-Ireland final. I remember coming home from the banquet with my great friend Pádraic Flesk, we got a taxi home from the banquet. When we looked at each other and said, we were so close to winning an All-Ireland today. We have an absolutely exceptional team. And yet, if you told me we wouldn't reach an All-Ireland final for another 10 years, I wouldn't be that surprised either. It's so hard to get there. It's incredibly hard to get to an All-Ireland final. It's incredibly hard to win one. But I think that Galway have they've answered a lot of the questions, you know. So it's just really a case of whether they can put it together. But I wouldn't be downplaying Galway's chances for sure, you know. I thought actually Jeremy made a great point about Shane Walsh as well, that he'd never gone as long into the club championship as he had with Crokes last year, and did that kind of, he never really came back and looked in the full of his health and running on the top of the ground after that, last summer. So maybe this year he's had that experience already. He's not going like all the way to an Ireland final this year, and maybe the couple of weeks might be useful even before the start of the National League. But he's gone through that now, and maybe he knows a few more things about his body that he'll need to look after. And he's that important to us. He's an exceptional football player, and if we have him firing on all cylinders, then that gives us something that Barr, Clifford, and Kerry, no other county has. Just a guy who can just turn it on to an extent that he has a gear that no one else other than Clifford has, and that's a pretty big weapon.
He really showed that against Glenn with the pass at the weekend. It was exceptional, wasn't it?
Yeah, an exceptional moment, Now, the man who was marking him won man of the match. So, and Warnock did a brilliant job on him, an absolutely brilliant job on him. And I suppose really what we're looking for with Shane is less, we know the moment will always come. There'll be one game or one moment in every game that Shane Walsh plays that he does something that no one else can do, and that's the way it's always been. It's just getting that kind of, a consistent presence in the game, that he did show, in 2022. That's what we're looking for. The pass is a joke. Like, it's genuinely, if it was a worse footballer, you'd say it's a terrible attempt at a point. But that he knows, like, he's assimilated the geometry required to hit that pass. That there's like, it's not just a pass, it's the pace of the pass, it's the pace of the kick that takes out the defender, that actually means that the guy receiving the actually can't miss. He gets the ball into his chest, and the defender is scrambling because of the pace of the pass, which means that Shane has not just passed the ball, he's actually passed the defender out of the way of the forward as well. It was an incredible moment, like genuinely an incredible piece of skill. And we know it's there, so it's just a case of bringing that to the fore more often.
Just one query here. Who's your favorite Galway footballer at the moment to watch?
My favorite goal with, well, I mean, I suppose it has to be Shane. But I mean, there's something elemental about Damien Comer getting the ball and deciding, this time I'm not going to hand pass it in the direction from which the ball came. I'm actually just going to face a guy up, take him on, and beat him. And there's an electricity around that that's kind of hard to beat. And that's an incredible choice that we have as Galway supporters. That we get to see two guys who can actually just like electrify crowds. But there Shane does such daft things all the time. That goal he scored, it was in the Leinster Championship, I think, was it? Where he picks up the ball in the 45 and solos the ball and just like head and like he heads it back into his hand, And you're just looking at that going, like, what is going on in your brain? That's what he decides to do, So he puts a smile on my face, I can't help it. But they're a very like, I mean, I was, I think as a county, I think we've probably underappreciated Paul Conroy over the course of the last 2 decades. I think he's been an ex like a genuinely exceptional Galway footballer for nearly 2 decades, and it's impossible what he's done in a lot of ways. He comes on the team as a senior team as a 19-year-old. He's still there. He's still absolutely vital to kind of our chances this year. And he's never given less than 100%. His attitude has always just been absolutely spot on. I think he's an incredible ambassador for the county as well. And is just, any deals I've ever had, just a great fella, just a genuinely great fella. And I think we've maybe underestimated him and maybe taken him a bit for granted over the years. And I have a mountain of respect for Paul Conroy, to be honest.
I think that's nationwide too, isn't it? That there's an
Yeah.
underappreciation for him.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. And certainly in the, it was the first half of 2022, he was kind of belatedly getting his flowers from the national media. But he's been doing that for years. He's been doing that for absolute years. And you know, kind of all of the things that we talk about in Gaelic football that we'd love to see more of. You know, a guy who just like his first option is always get his head up. Is there a 35, 40-yard foot pass I can kick here? Like Conroy's been doing that for years and is still doing it and is an, you know, an incredible foot passer. Yeah, I like he's maybe the correct answer to the question he asked, you know, but I'm devil for the, you know, the shiny thing. And that's shaded David Comer, maybe.
Yeah, it is very hard to pick one, in fairness. Just on the book, finally, you talk about going to matches with your family. You talk about experience different matches. But I think in the book, it's so relatable to Galway supporters, like the big day out of a match. And like you talked there about the anticipation of the season starting already. It's so relatable to so many Galway supporters reading this book.
Yeah, you know, and maybe it can be difficult to separate it out, you know, because you're not really talking about just a sporting event. In my experience, you know, my experience now is having lived in Dublin from 2003, that the better Galway are going, the more I see of my family. And so there's like an emotional thing going on there as well, which is very difficult to say, and I don't want to separate it from the actual sport that's happening, you know. So yeah, maybe my experience is a little different, you know. If you live beside your family, then you know you're probably maybe more likely to go with your friends than your family, you know. But for me, if Galway games means I get to see my nephews and nieces 300% more than I would over the course of a summer, it means I get to see my parents, my brothers. So it is very emotionally tied up in kind of my family life as well. And I don't think that I'm unique in that at all. I think that oftentimes these games are just an outlet for us to revel for a minute, maybe in kind of civic pride and pride in kind of where you're from and just being, you know, embracing the fact that being for Galway means that you're different from the 31 other counties. You know, how different maybe we can overstate from time to time, but you know, it's our day in the sun when you get to go to Croke Park and see Galway in hurling and football semi-finals, as we were lucky enough to do in consecutive weekends. Like, imagine, you know, like it's such a gift, and it's an incredible gift that the hurlers have us, you know, that the hurlers give us massive occasions as well. Throughout the summertime, like we're blessed, like we're genuinely, absolutely blessed. So, kind of trying to write about that is weird because you know I'm kind of in like a kind of a halfway house, you know, where I'm expected to write a column that's unbiased, but there's no such thing because the column is about the GA, so everyone has their own club, everyone has their own county. That's not to say that there's not a pressure on me to be fair. Like unbiased is impossible. Fair is absolutely possible, and I think that you know you could just try and walk that tightrope as best you can, or you present a podcast where you can embrace the fact that you enjoyed the game as a supporter, but when it comes to actually analysing what happens on the field, then you just have to be fair. Again, unbiased is impossible, but fair is absolutely possible. So, you know, there's a lot going on when I go to these Galway games because you do have to approach it with like that kind of journalistic hat on as well. Even if I don't have to file a match report, you know, half an hour after the game is finished or whatever, I do get a chance to decompress and wake up the following morning and say, right, okay, fandom aside, what did I actually think happened here? And then talk about it in that through that sphere. So, Yeah, it means a lot though, you know, and I think it means a lot to a lot of people, and you there's no point in hiding or running away from that fact. Like it's not juvenile, it's not puerile to think that these football games are, while they're going on, the most important thing in your life at that time. Like that's why we love it. That's why we love sport to the extent that we do. So I think we're just really, really lucky to come from a county that's fighting on both fronts and has so many brilliant ambassadors, I think, as well. Like we're just really, really lucky on that front and have been for the last 20 years or so. To be able to put our ha put our put the fate of our summer in the hands of some brilliant people and some brilliant athletes.
Just finally, before we finish, what's been your favorite moment as a Galway supporter?
See, this is weird actually, because obviously, coming from Milltown, it should be a football memory, and there probably are, if I thought long and hard, I mean, 98 is kind of unbeatable, really, like, and Ja and the whole thing, it's very hard to beat. But watching Joe Canning's point against Tipperary in 2017. And it just so happened that I was standing, or I was sitting in the Cusack stand directly in line. You could draw a straight line basically from my seat to Joe Canning to the Hill 16 goal. So from the second it left us early, I knew it was going over. So there was like, kind of like a line of maybe like 300 or 400 people in that like direct line of sight that from the second he hit it, you knew it was going over. So that line kind of begins with Joe and goes back, in a diagonal line through the Cusack stand. And me and my brother were there, and it was the most incredible moment. Like, genuinely, just because there's a lot. Anyway, we talk about sort of Shane and Damien Comer in the light of the footballers. There is something about the big name doing it at the moment of kind of the highest pressure that is just it, there's kind of like a myth-making thing, that goes on that we all love, that we in the final analysis, you want your favorite player to do the thing that wins the game. And in that moment, like it was incredible. I remember being in like walking out of the ground and just kind of like being in a daze in the Hogan Stand pub on the North Circular and just people from Galway just coming up and just hugging each other. It was just such a brilliant day. And I remember being in Neary's pub just off Grafton Street about 3 hours later, and Malachy Clerkin's match report in the Irish Times had ju was literally just up on the website, and myself and my brother just went up to the bar and just read it again, and we were just like, we almost got a chance to like be back in the moment again, reading the match report, and then the Sunday game comes on and we relive it all over again, and it was just an incredible memory to have. So yeah, I mean, there kind of hasn't been like maybe has you know am I missing like a brilliant football moment? I mean, watching Darren and Diarmuid and John Devine win big games and county titles, like that's absolutely brilliant as well, and I shouldn't gainsay that either, but that's kind of the one that stands out just because it's a moment, it's just like one moment of just like pure perfection.
Yeah, no, that was a great moment. I remember being there too, when that just floated over. I think it was special for Galway people as well, because it's Tipperary.
There was a lot that went in, and I was being polite there, not mentioning the tip lads,
But
but
that was great, and thanks a million to Ciarán Murphy for coming on. And
thanks
if
to
you
me and
have
Paul. Thanks to me for having me. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate the work you do with the podcast as well. And I couldn't say no to a podcast sponsored by my midfield partner on the Gerlis first on the Gerlis first year A team in 1995-96 as well, either. So yeah, absolutely.